Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Which do you think is more popular in the world, tea or coffee? Welcome, everyone. My name is Linda, and I'm glad you're joining us today on Advanced Studio Classroom for our Trends article. We're going to talk today and tomorrow about tea farmers are switching to coffee. And today I have with me in the studio two guests. Simon?
Hi, it's great to be here again on Advanced Radio. I had a wonderful opportunity a few years ago to interview the owner of a coffee company, and it gave me a chance to learn a lot of different things about both of these beverages. So I'm really excited to be here talking about this great topic with you today.
And we also have with us Amanda. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you. Hi, listeners. It's great to be back and talking about this topic. I don't know if many of you know, but I am a great fan of coffee. So anything about coffee is always interesting to me. And I found this article just insightful as to what's going on right now.
I found it very informative as well, and I think that you listeners will also maybe a little surprised at what's happening to the tea fields in China, or at least some of them. So today we're going to be talking about tea farmers switch to coffee. It doesn't mean every tea farmer, but there is a trend. That's this topic, overall topic, is trends, what's going on in the world, and we see a trend in China. If we look underneath our title, we see that Chinese farmers discover coffee may prove to be more lucrative than tea. And we have one of our key words here today. What does lucrative mean to you, Simon?
Lucrative really just means you're making money. It pays more money. And so farmers have discovered they can earn more money by growing coffee than they can by growing tea.
I found that fascinating as well, because tea is so popular in this part of the world.
Exactly. We know, you know, China is well known for its tea and its tea culture. So for it to realize that perhaps coffee is more lucrative, this is a big deal.
Well, we'll see if tea or if coffee is actually taking over tea consumption in China. It doesn't seem that it is yet totally, but there are some trends, and we'll find out who really is consuming all of this coffee. But first, turn to page 40 if you have your magazine with you, and let's read this first column.
Tea farmers switch to coffee. Chinese farmers discover coffee may prove to be more lucrative than tea. Poor China. This remote southwestern city near the borders of Laos and Myanmar is named after one of China's most famous teas, grown on mountain terraces painstakingly carved out of the region's rich red soil. But in recent years, poor tea has surrendered prime real estate for more lucrative brew, coffee. Chinese farmers have taken to the new crop, which thrives in high-altitude areas of Yunnan province and commands up to 3 times as much money as tea. My sole income depends on coffee now, said Ma Jiaying, a farmer from a dab-sized hamlet in Pur called Tea Tree Village. Behind the change are major foreign producers, including Seattle's Starbucks Corporation and Switzerland's Nestle. Those multinationals are training farmers and buying beans from the region to meet the world's growing thirst for coffee. More important, Yunnan has the potential to thrive as a production base in a country that is becoming increasingly hooked on the caffeine-loaded beverage. Long dismissed by many Chinese as being too bitter, coffee has enjoyed a surge in popularity among the country's young urban elite.
So we see that our article is taking us to the far southwest area, Pu'er, China. Have either one of you ever been there?
No.
To Yunnan?
Not there, but I've been to China.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, it's not surprising that none of us have been there because it's a remote area. And remote just means that it's not very common. It's hard to get to. So this is in the southwestern city. Pu'er is actually a city, and it's near the borders of Laos and Myanmar. And the city is named after one of the famous teas grown there. Do you want to tell us about this, Amanda?
Well, Pu'er is a very famous tea within China, actually around the world. I think most people have had some contact with Pu'er. I know in recent years, even in the West, people were aware of Pu'er for its qualities of helping people look more beautiful and younger.
I thought it was very interesting here that it says the city is named after the tea.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we name things after the city they come from, right?
Right.
But in this case, it seems that it's the other way around, and the city has been named for the tea.
Mm. I thought that was very surprising to me as well. And we see here that it's grown on mountain terraces, and a terrace, if you live in any mountainous area and they use these for farming, especially for tea, terrace is kind of a flat strip of land that it's along the slope of a hill, so they level it off a little bit so they can grow there.
Yeah, most people will have seen pictures of terraced mountains. They kind of look like there's steps carved into the side of the mountain.
And they also grow rice on terraces as well. So rice farmers also carve these steps into the sides of slopes of mountains.
They do use this interesting word painstakingly, though, because, of course, these terraces aren't a natural thing. People have to actually go to the trouble of building them. And this term painstakingly, which suggests it's a very painful sort of process, a very difficult thing to do, takes a lot of time, it tells us that it's not easy to make terraces.
Right. And this is it's one of our vocabulary focus words, and it's quite a good word to know, especially if you're involved in some kind of very tedious, kind of slow work that takes a lot of care. Mm. And so it can be very painstaking. And they say they carve it out of the region's rich red soil. Usually if an area has red soil, we do consider it to be a certain kind that's good for growing crops.
Right, quite fertile.
Right.
So we know already from that we're learning that it is an area which may be quite ideal for growing crops.
Right, especially tea and coffee, obviously.
Mm.
But something has changed from this tea area now. It says that in recent years, Pu'er tea has surrendered prime real estate, more lucrative brew, coffee. I think this is a great sentence. It has a lot of picturesque language in it. So, you know, you can see the tea surrendering. And what does prime real estate mean?
Usually when we use this word prime, we're referring to something that is top quality. So I guess what we're saying here is when the Pu'er tea has surrendered prime real estate, we mean it's lost the fight for or it's lost the best real estate. And instead, the best real estate or property, farmland, is being used for something else. A more lucrative brew.
And we've learned that word earlier, lucrative, meaning to produce a lot of money. That was in the deck earlier. And then, of course, a new word, brew. And brew is a word we use often for a drink, either tea or a coffee. And it's also talking about how it's made, you know, when something is brewed. So it can also be actually a verb as well.
Right. So here's another one of those words, both a noun and a verb.
Right.
And that brew is coffee in this instance. I think it's kind of interesting because I think to grow tea plants or tea bushes, that takes a long time. So I just wonder if they like pulled up the plants and discarded them to make way for these coffee plants or if they've moved them somewhere. It seems to me that's a big investment just to be giving up.
Yeah, it's interesting because clearly one of the themes of this article is that this is a difficult change. And you see that in a lot of the language. For example, just creating farms in this area, we talked about the terraces and how it was painstaking. It was a very difficult thing.
Right.
But it's also important to remember that tea trees or tea bushes take a long time to grow. And you really have to do a lot to care for them. But the same is true for coffee trees or coffee bushes.
Right. I think before we were on air, Simon was saying that for certain kinds of beans, it takes up to 7 years before they actually produce beans that are good enough to use. Mm. So that's a long time investment.
Mm. It is a long time.
But now we come to this farmer who now says, my sole income, his sole income means his only income, is now depends on coffee.
That's right. We see Chinese farmers have taken to the new crop. We use the word thrive, you know, which thrives in this high altitude area of Yunnan province. So we see that the coffee is replacing tea. It's a new crop. And we use the word thrive, meaning to flourish or do well. So we also learned that these coffee plants do well in a high altitude area, which Yunnan has a lot of.
And they don't just do well, they earn a lot more money. So at the moment, you can earn a lot more money by selling coffee beans than you can by selling tea.
Mm. Right. It says it commands up to means they can get three times as much money as tea. That's amazing. And we go to this farmer. In our next paragraph, we see that the farmer, Ma Jiaying, his sole income or his only income now comes from coffee. I think before he must have been a tea farmer because he lives in Pu'er called the Tea Tree Village. And this is a great description, a dab-size hamlet.
Dab-size, usually when we use this word dab, we're referring to something like painting. Mm. When you put a little bit of paint maybe on a piece of paper, you'd say you dabbed some paint or there's a dab of paint on the paper. And so the idea is it's a very small drop like sized thing. And that word hamlet, of course, it's a word for, you know, kind of a village-like thing, but smaller than a village. We talk about cities being the biggest and towns and villages. And then somewhere smaller than that is a hamlet.
Maybe I think in different areas and countrysides in particular, where there's a very small community, we would call that a hamlet.
Mm. Yes. I think it's also something you would see in a lot of literature, especially English literature. They use Hamlet a lot.
Right. So behind the change that's occurring in Yunnan are major foreign producers like Starbucks and Switzerland's Nestle Corporation. And they call these multinationals, which means that they are multinational companies functioning all over the world. They are training farmers and buying beans from the region to meet the world's growing thirst for coffee. This is a lot of picturesque language used here. What would you say this means?
Well, I think you mentioned they're multinational, they're international companies. Perhaps at one point they've seen the fact that this area is a very good area for growing coffee, and then they've approached the farmers and said, hey, let's train you so that we can produce coffee beans here and then buy from them to meet what it says, meet the world's growing thirst. I think that is interesting because we can see even daily around us the amount of coffee shops that are appearing, showing us that there's a desire for more coffee.
Right. And we know that thirsty, so they're just using that word, I'm thirsty, I need something to drink. So the thirst for something means you have a great desire for it.
We mentioned earlier that these coffee plants thrive in these mountain areas, and we get a hint of that again in the next paragraph, where it says, more important, Yunnan has the potential to thrive as a production base. So the idea being that this area is really perfect for growing this type of crop.
Right, and in a country that is becoming increasingly hooked on the caffeine-loaded beverage. Now, this term hooked on can mean to take hold of. It's taking hold of people, or it also means to become addicted to.
That's correct.
I thought that was interesting. I didn't really realize it had that feeling to it. So there's kind of a play here. It depends upon how you look at it. So the country, China, is becoming increasingly addicted to or taking hold of caffeine-loaded beverage.
Right. There's been an increase in the popularity of people drinking coffee. I know even for myself, when I first came to Asia, people were more inclined to drink tea rather than coffee. And in the time that I've been here, more and more people are drinking coffee.
Right. I think that's true all over Asia.
Mm. And we get a hint of that in the next sentence where it says, long dismissed by many Chinese as being too bitter. So for a long time, Chinese people tended to think that coffee was too bitter, tea was a better choice. Mm. But it mentions then, continuing, that coffee has become more popular. It says it's enjoyed a surge, which means rapid growth in popularity, among the young urban elite. So,
what is urban elite?
Well, young people who are living in cities, urban areas. And elite, I guess the idea would be they're people who are professionals or earning a lot more money than people have earned in the past.
Well, it also means the elite, usually they have more advantages than others, so they have a higher status, so they are willing to spend the money that it takes.
Right, because coffee can be a little bit more expensive than tea.
Right, and I think it's interesting about being bitter. I know when I moved to Asia, the coffee here is a lot stronger than the area of the country that I am from in the United States. Mm-hmm. And there, I remember I went back to visit once and my aunt was making coffee and she said, oh, I know you like your coffee stronger, so I'll put another scoop in the coffee pot. I was like, thank you, so it has some flavor.
Not just colored water.
Not just colored water, right. Well, let's continue our reading on page 41.
Increasing demand. At 120,000 tons last year, China's coffee consumption was only 6% that of the United States, the world's top consumer of hot joe. Meanwhile, about 1 million tons of tea was consumed in China last year. Still, analysts for Barclays expect Chinese coffee demand to grow nearly 40% each year until about 2015. Coffee houses are percolating too. Sales are projected to expand 23.5% annually on average to about $1.6 billion by 2016, according to Euromonitor, a global research group. Much of that growth is expected to come from Starbucks, which plans to more than double its Chinese stores to 1,500 by 2015. That would make China its second biggest market, following the United States.
Okay, so we see in this column we're introduced to the increasing demand that people have for coffee, and we look at some numbers. It says at 120,000 tons last year, China's coffee consumption was only 6% that of the United States. So last year, China wasn't drinking too much coffee compared to America.
Well, I wonder if anybody is compared to America. Well, maybe Europe.
Yeah.
Europeans are very famous for drinking coffee.
Well, this paragraph gives us another number, too. It says about 1 million tons of tea was consumed in China last year. Mm-hmm. And so we get this idea that even though coffee is becoming more popular, maybe even becoming more popular very quickly, it's not really as popular as tea is at this point.
Right.
It's like a tenth as popular, it looks like, 120,000 tons, not even a tenth, to 1 million tons of tea. That's a big, big difference.
Very big difference. But it's interesting that they use a term for coffee called hot joe. And that's a slang that we use when we're talking about coffee. And I just had a look at where the term came from, hot joe. Originally, there was a man called Stephen Collins Foster. He was a singer in 1860. Perhaps listeners are familiar with songs like Oh Susanna, Don't You Cry For Me. That was a song he sang, and he sang another song called Old Black Joe. Now, people in the military heard this song, and they took on the slang and started using it to talk about their coffee.
Yeah, I'll have a cup of joe.
Yeah.
I never say that, but do you ever use this, Simon?
I have never said it. I'm still not going to say it, but I have heard it said.
Yeah, I've heard it said too, but it's not something that I say either.
Not a normal term. I think I would say it just in a humorous way, but definitely not in a normal everyday life.
So it's one of those terms, maybe if you hear it, you'll know what it means, but it's not that commonly used, I don't think.
And sometimes you'll hear it in the movies. Another term would be hot java. You know, there are different words we use for coffee.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And moving on to the next paragraph, we see that even though coffee is not yet as popular as tea, it's expected to continue growing in popularity. And actually growing in popularity very quickly. It says analysts for Barclays, which is an investment bank, expect demand to grow by nearly 40% each year.
And that is a lot.
And that's until 2015, which is only 2 years from now.
That's right.
So that's a huge increase from what it is now. I don't know if it'll still meet the 100 million tons of tea that's consumed, but it's a huge, huge increase. And also, along with coffee comes coffee houses. Interesting, huh? And again, they use coffee language here. Coffee houses are percolating, too.
Percolating is a very interesting word. I remember when I was fairly young, my dad used to make coffee with a machine called a percolator.
So did my mom.
And it was kind of this pot thing that kept the coffee beans that were all ground up separate from the water, mm-hmm. but the water kind of bubbled up into the coffee. And so it was sort of a different way of preparing coffee. But nonetheless, the percolator was a machine that let you prepare coffee. And here we have this percolating being used to suggest that something is cooking up or mm-hmm. being created. Coffee houses are being created.
Mm. So they're making coffee houses like they're making coffee. And sales are projected to expand 23.5% annually on an average to about $1.6 billion by 2016. That is a lot, a big change. And this is according to Euromonitor, and this is a marketing research group. It says it's a global research group. It's a marketing research group. But I wanted to go back to this 23.5%. I think a lot of people get confused about what word to use when you see that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And depending upon what we use, we say it differently. So if you come to an end of a sentence, okay, what do we use?
We call it a period in that case.
And when do we use the word dot? It's the same symbol, but we also use dot.
When we're talking about an email address.
Okay, so gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe when we're using it, but not really as a period at the end of the sentence.
Or like www.something.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, though, because when we're talking about like decimal places, we mm-hmm. don't actually say dot or period. We say point. Right.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So in this case, 23.5%. If that were money, though, it would be different again. We would say $23.50.
Right. So we use the and word.
Mm.
We use and. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to talk about this a little bit because I think it's confusing to everybody. And also dots are on a piece of paper. If you see like points, I guess. You see points on a piece of paper, we say that's a lot of dots. Mm. Or on fabric sometimes you'll see dots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going back to our paragraph here, it says that much of the growth in China is expected to come from Starbucks. And we have this really interesting sidebar there on page 41 called Starbucks in Asia. It shows how many different coffee mm-hmm. shops Starbucks has in these different places. I was surprised by how many coffee shops there were.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot in Asia. I was very surprised as well. And at the top of the page, on page 41, the right-hand column, let's take a look at this sidebar we have, some extra information here. It is an expensive habit, and it's talking about Starbucks in China. And I think this first paragraph is quite interesting. Simon, do you want to read this?
That's right. They say, few pairings denote upward mobility more than an iPhone in one hand and a white and green Starbucks cup in the other. In central Beijing, the company's smallest cappuccino costs about $4.33, making a Chinese Starbucks habit one of the most expensive in the world.
And I think probably this goes back to the end of the column on page 40 where it says that there's a surge in popularity among young urban elite because they probably have the money to spend on it.
That's right. They go on to say Starbucks in China for the young generation is almost like religion. And this is said by Lu Minghui. And we'll actually learn more about him later. But he is head of Pu'er-based I Need Coffee, which is China's largest coffee production and exporting company.
Right. These people, we want to quote him here, they want to be seen drinking their coffee. A lot of these Chinese kids have come back from studying overseas where they've been introduced to this new lifestyle.
Right.
So it seems like there's a growing coffee culture in China.
Mm-hmm. I think if you think about these young people, they go and study in universities, and on most university campuses, there are a lot of either coffee houses, coffee shops, or even just little vendors selling their coffee.
Right. If we go back to the first sentence, okay, few pairings denote upward mobility more than an iPhone and a Starbucks. So here the word denote indicates that they are growing, are moving upward. Okay, mobility means to be able to move, so upward mobility means their status is increasing.
Yeah, it shows people are doing well, earning a lot of money, and I guess maybe even a little bit internationalized, understanding what's going on in the world.
And perhaps that's why if we go back to the bottom of our column, we'll see much of the growth expected to come from Starbucks, because having this Starbucks cup in your hand means that you have some kind of status.
Right. And if we see that it continues to grow like it has been, it says that Starbucks plans to more than double its Chinese stores to 1,500 by 2015, and then China would be the second biggest market after the United States. Wow. So that's pretty amazing.
That is a lot of coffee.
Interesting stuff.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, but don't go away because we have a short feature for you.
Hey, Lauren, I'm glad I caught you before you left for your trip. You're going to China, right?
Yeah. It's a painstaking process, but I get to visit a coffee plantation in a hamlet in Yunnan province.
Why aren't you staying in the city? Wouldn't that be more fun?
Well, I am writing a story on the increasing demand for coffee globally. Now that coffee is becoming more lucrative, it's affecting tea production.
Well, who doesn't love a good brew?
I actually prefer tea over coffee, but I do love the smell of coffee percolating in the morning.
I love coffee. Be sure to bring me back some. Have fun in China.
I will. Thanks, Patricia.
Well, don't forget to join us again tomorrow for our second day about talking about tea farmers switching to coffee. So we'll see you then, and bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.